This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs with Wells Tech. Episode 463 is up today for Tuesday, September 20th, 2016, a show about technology and ministry. And helping me do that each and every week, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, how are you?
I am present and accounted for. How are you this afternoon, Martin?
Excellent. Sun is shining. Evenings are a little cooler, so good sleeping weather, and lots of community feedback for today. So I'm in a good mood. How about you?
I guess I can say the same. I have my 23 tabs open, ready to share all kinds of goodness with our Wells Tech listeners and watchers.
I suppose community feedback day is one of those lot of tab open days, but that's not even close to a record, I'm sure.
Probably not. I use a tool in Google Chrome called, I don't even remember, Tab Cloud, I think is the name of it.
Sounds right.
And it allows me to save my tabs in case the unthinkable happens and my browser crashes. And then also when I need to go back and type up the show notes, which can take a while when you have 23 tabs open. At least I have all of them open and can easily grab links and things that way.
So if something goes horribly wrong, I think you can get back to it that way too, right?
It's absolutely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So. Nice little tip or trick. And I would think that that might be something useful in a classroom scenario too, so that you can store those over time, come back to those. Cool. Very cool. This is Community Feedback Show. As I mentioned, those of you that maybe haven't viewed previous episodes, maybe you're a first timer, maybe you haven't jumped into one of these Community Feedback Shows. It is a show we run once a month, and we take the time to kind of collect up all the things that have kind of gone through our Wells Tech doors, and we put them all together, and we share them with everybody else, and we chit-chat a little bit about them. So not a real structured agenda for this show, but one of my favorites because we get to hear from our listeners, and they're coming from all over the place. They have different ministry experiences, different responsibilities, and we see that in the variety of ways that they communicate with us and the things they communicate with us about. Maybe before we even jump in, we should remind everybody how to submit an item for community feedback. If you go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, you will see a number of options for you to take advantage of. In the upper right, you see things, some familiar icons, Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, Digo, Pinterest, Instagram is there now as well. And there's email, wellstech@wells.net. And right there, even on the page, you can do a couple things. You can leave a note on a particular show or a comment, or you can click the blue bar on the right side. It's kind of hugging the right edge of the web browser to submit a voicemail. And that's all done right through your computer. You just hit the big green button that says start recording. You start talking. You may have to give permission for it to use your microphone, but that's it. That would be a great addition to the show is if we get a few more voicemails. So consider using that technique if you would, but by all means, jump in, join the conversation. And if you want to remain anonymous, just let us know that and we'll share what you have, but we won't share your name and such. So. It's fun. Try it. You'll like it.
And we'll all learn something. I think these community feedback shows have very quickly become some of my favorites because there's almost always something for everyone and new things that I haven't heard about.
You have no clue.
Absolutely.
So that's great.
Yep. We should get started right away with one of our favorite longtime Wells Tech listeners, and that would be the good Pastor Professor Dr. Tom Custer, who is behind the Christ in Media Institute at Bethany Lutheran College, and also a new effort called Gospel Outreach with Media, where they've organized some online conferences, and there's one coming up very soon to discuss that very thing, all different flavors of gospel outreach with media. And someone I know is doing a presentation there.
Yeah, Tom asked me to do a little something there, and I'm doing a presentation I've done for about a year now at a different venues called Digital Christianship, examining why it might be a challenge for some, and many of us, in fact, to live our faith online through social media. Lots of opportunities the Lord has provided. So I took a Sway presentation that I had cooked up and then recorded a bunch of little 3 to 4 minute videos talking the student through their presentation. And I think the way Tom has put this together is there's kind of a feedback mechanism, a dialogue, a discussion board concept where all these conversations are going to go online, and he's got a number of great topics lined up, so you may want to check that out. I think that starts October 10th is when it goes online, and it's only online for a few weeks, so it's really focused and good stuff there, so check that out.
Definitely. And I know one of the main goals is to engage more high school and college students right. In the online conference this time. So some of the topics may be particularly relevant to them, but also relevant to all of us. And certainly we need to listen and learn from those young voices as well about outreach and how they are using media and how the gospel can be spread that way. So
future
wonderful ideas here. So. Mm-hmm. All right, then we can move along. We use Digo quite often to share links and things. And then if anyone's listening and wants to share links with us, it's a really easy way to do that. You just add it to the Wells Tech group. So let us know if you'd like to be part of that group, and you can share links via Digo as well. This month, we heard from a couple of listeners with shares in our Digo group, starting with Pastor Emil Burgess. He had a couple of things that he shared. The first one is that you can send to Kindle for Mac. And so those that are Mac users, you can use this. And I've got the wrong notes there. How about this? He said he bought a book today in EPUB and MOBI formats, but not from Amazon, so it didn't sync to his Kindle app for all his devices. But he found this little utility and found a version for Windows 2. So I'll look around, and there's actually a link right here. This is looking for the PC version, so versions for Mac and Windows. He says a bonus is you can send documents from other applications to your Kindle via the print menu or right-clicking on a Finder Explorer window. The only downside is that the file has to be 50 megabytes or smaller. So pretty nice if you're a Kindle reader, regularly use that for digital documents, then you can get a lot more than just the things you buy from Amazon onto your Kindle using this utility. So check it out.
Kindle is really the single place where I try and gather all those ebooks and e-documents, regardless of what their format is. If I can get them into Kindle, then I know I'm going to be able to retrieve them later because I've got Kindle on every device that I have. So whether it's a tablet, a phone, a computer, or a physical Kindle device, my library goes with me. So obviously I get a lot of technical books, but I also have some other reading stuff that I try and categorize and keep there, and it just becomes a unified experience rather than all these e-things coming all are located all over my computer or my online, you know, cloud subscriptions. Getting them into Kindle seems to be the only way that I can figure out how to find them again. And mm-hmm. you can bookmark them and those kinds of things as well. So good find.
Yeah, definitely. And one more from Pastor Burgess, just a mention of this New York Post article. It's titled, It's Digital Heroin, How Screens Turn Kids into Psychotic Junkies. That's some pretty strong terminology. And I'm guessing that the author used it to to grab our attention and to, you know, connect some importance to this article. And they show a kid in bed looking at an iPad screen, you know, that kind of thing. So definitely some food for thought. I haven't made it all the way through the article yet, but something we want to consider, and something as those of us who want to reach out to children, to educate them in our schools and churches, may need to be aware of as far as how their brains are developing because of the use of screens.
It's like any other addiction. You have to obviously recognize it and then prepare for it, and you know, just use good old-fashioned parenting skills to make good choices for those kids.
Mm-hmm. Next up, we heard from our friend Brent Nimmers. I think I'm the one that actually threw it onto Digo just so I wouldn't lose the link. This was a share of the Adobe Color Wheel. So this is part of the Adobe Creative Cloud. It's available online, and we'll have a link to it in the show notes. But a really great place where you can go and get different color layouts if you're trying to build a website, or maybe you're just trying to paint your house or something. You can use these colors for all different resources. He says it's an awesome tool for those of us who don't have an eye for these things. So if you're able to see my screen, I'm sharing the color wheel. And what you can do is as you change colors by dragging, it's all based off of one center color. And then you can get all these different types. So if you find a good center color that you want to base your color scheme off of, maybe it's a tan or something like that, then you can switch to monochromatic. You can get triad, where it brings in three different color combinations, complementary colors, compound colors, and shades. So you have a lot of different options that you can choose from based on that one, and it's picking colors that I would guess mathematically balance it out based on these different rules of color spectrum and stuff. So once you have it, it gives you the color codes in RGB, hex, and hex format for all five colors, which are part of your color spectrum. So you basically have a collection of colors. I think there's even a way where you can upload an image, and it will associate colors with that image. Mm-hmm. And literally, you could take these color codes to the paint store, and they would even produce paint that matches exactly to your color code. So you can do all kinds of things with these, and it just gives you a broader idea of different color combinations.
And if you sign in with your Adobe account, you can save these colors into your mm-hmm. My Themes section. As you mentioned, Sal, you can upload images. One real great use for you webmasters is to upload your logo. It will pick out the colors of the logo and offer you some suggestions for themes you could use to, you know, maybe map out your website, make it look a little bit more cohesive. You could do this for church brochures, your letterhead, whatever. Cool tool that's been around for quite some time, but I think it gets better and better and very visually attractive application.
And, you know, I guess I should say you don't have to just use the sliders associated. You can put in your own hex codes or your own RGB and base it off of that. So lots of possibilities here. Thanks, Brent, for reminding us of that great tool. And then finally, we heard from Jason Winjet, and he shared a couple of articles from Church Mag, which is an online magazine. They have their own podcast and things where they're looking at all things church and technology. And one is called How to Determine Your Church's Digital Direction. And it actually includes an infographic where they have a digital maturity model. And churches, they're just kind of capitalizing on the fact that you're content creators in a church setting. So you want to probably progress through this model to share that content, particularly worship content, sermon content, that kind of thing. And their model shows audio podcasting, video on demand, so you're recording the video and putting it on your website for people to watch. And then next up would be live streaming, taking it to the exact time of broadcast and live streaming the event. Then they talked about streaming to over the top. And I hadn't heard that term, Martin. I don't know if you have. OTT, OTT, but over the top, they're referring to being able to stream to things like Apple TV, Roku, that kind of device. They actually have a picture, I think, of a PS3 with a little game controller next to it. So I wasn't familiar with another level of streaming that you could do to those kind of devices. So that's really interesting. And then finally, enhancing it further by adding more events that you're streaming, for instance, midweek Bible studies or devotionals or things like that, so that people are even more engaged in your weekly content. There's more of it to take advantage of. So Jason's comments were that he 100% agreed with this article. They nailed it. This is what we've seen in our church over the last decade, and I'm seeing with other churches I'm working on developing a plan for. So perhaps a good way for you to start is to follow kind of in this order of adding more digital media, audiovisual media to your church website. They give you an idea of cost as well as the amount of manpower needed to do each of the different solutions.
Yeah, I just like the way they put their infographic together. Very kind of easy to read and follow. Pretty powerful communication tool.
And you know what? I read the rest of it, but I forgot. Down at the bottom, they said, beyond that, you basically could have, you know, the final step would be an online church, a 24/7 staffed interactive experience. And it says 30% of mega churches have an online campus. So perhaps over time, we'll see more and more of that kind of thing. All right. And then one more from Jason and from Church Mag is an article titled Best Web Hosting for Churches and Which to Avoid. So they're looking at different web hosts that are out there, things like GoDaddy and Namecheap and DreamHost and SiteGround, and they've kind of ranked them in regard to the best experiences. And I was really excited to see this. I didn't even know anyone else knew about SiteGround, but that's the host that I use for my personal websites, and they were ranked first on the list. So that was pretty cool to see. They have different ways that they rank them, and they ended up with an average rating of 9.6. Others that they mentioned, InMotion Hosting, Namecheap, and DreamHost. Martin, I think you're familiar with DreamHost.
That's what I use for my domain hosted site. So,
mm-hmm. And then
mentioned there was WP Engine. I don't know if that's in the list there or not, but it was one of the images that they used up at the top, and that's what we use for our Synod's website at this point.
Yeah. They have a few listed as worst web hosting for churches, so you can read through that list yourself. Yeah, I don't see WP Engine listed in either group, so I'm not quite sure where they fall. I'll have to read it a little bit closer to figure that out. Anyway, Jason's comments I thought were pretty interesting. He said, I can agree with one of the don't use host. We had our church with them before we moved to Final Web. We've been with Final Web for a few years, and they have been slow to release responsive designs. Their streaming service is affordable and solid. They do now have app options, which I've not seen, but which I've seen but not explored. So Final Web's offering some of the things that these were based on. But I guess, you know, you have to keep in mind that as they're making this list, this is for the hosting side of thing, like how much uptime you have, how easy it is to get support and upgrade and things like that. And Final Web, I think, has been really excellent in terms of uptime and support and things like that. So if you just look at that side of Final Web, I think they compare very favorably to these. The other piece of the puzzle is the software you use on the web host. And that's what we think of more when we think of Final Web, their content management system. Each of these hosts in the article, you're going to have the ability to install software like WordPress or whatever you're interested in installing and maintain that yourself. So the fact that Final Web gives you the platform and the software, you know, is a plus, I think, and is something beyond the scope of this article specifically.
Right. One of the questions I get a lot, Sally, and I think you do too, or get related to Final Web, which is a wonderful partner and we're really happy to have them, is, well, I wish they would get some new templates out and the ability to do some mobile design or mobile friendly layouts and templates, and they've only got just a couple of those kinds of templates right now. Although we were on a call with Brian Schaefer of Final Web probably last month, and he laid out the plans for kind of a total rewrite of the content management system with an eye toward that responsive design approach and all of the templates getting to that point. And they were looking at hopefully a timeline that showed around the new year that we'd start begin seeing some of this stuff coming out. So I think I'm very excited at least about the possibilities of Final Web launching those and our churches and schools being able to use those responsive templates that that they've been asking for.
Yep. And in case that makes you feel a little nervous, if you're a Final Web user, one of the pieces of the puzzle will be a migration tool. So not only great new Final Web 2.0, but also the ability to switch to it as painlessly as possible. And so I'm looking forward to the changes, and the things we saw demoed were really excellent. So
yep.
Good news.
Exciting times.
Definitely. All right. I will just make mention that we have a Wells Tech email group. We use Google Groups to pull that off, so you can head over to the link we provide in the show notes and join our Google group. And when you do, you'll be able to read archives as well as ask and answer questions related to technology in the church. And what I'm showing on my screen now is probably quite microscopic because it's a small font, but just an example. Someone asked about interactive whiteboards, and they just got extensive help from our really willing group of users in the Wells Tech email group. Everybody's just sharing all their knowledge, and it's wonderful to see and learn from everyone that's part of the group. Here's another question about digital displays in a church narthex, that kind of thing, and people pointed them to Asus Chromebits and HDMI displays and other solutions as well. So tap into that knowledge bank out there in the Wells Tech Google group if you haven't already, because there's likely someone out there who's doing the kind of things you're interested in and is willing to share their knowledge.
We're good.
All right. I did a little perusing of a couple of different online groups. There's a very active group on Google Plus that's called Wells Google Schools. And it's a private group, but you can certainly ask to join it. We'll have a link in the show notes. And just a couple of things that grabbed my attention, lots of good discussion there. One was a question, and I keep clicking the wrong place in my mind map, a question from Alex Hunt, who said he was looking to change his keyboarding/typing program. And I would say it was almost unanimous. Everyone pointed him to something called typing.com. It is free. It has teacher-student relationships built into the accounts that you create there so that you can have an overview of students' progress, the amount of time they use the software. Has a lot of great fun and engaging content. And did I mention that it was free? So $0. It looks like in the last 7 days, 2 billion keys have been typed and 2 million students have practiced. So people are using it, and that speaks well of anything. I think it's very Chromebook friendly because it's all in the cloud. And so, like I said, kind of an overwhelming response for the from the folks on the Google group site pointing Alex to typing.com.
So if you're looking for that solution. Addition there as well.
So right.
There are even additional features and, you know,
yep. Some grading and things like that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then also from that group, there was a question from Matt Notling looking for different online assessment tools to use with Chromebooks and Google Classroom. And again, a few different ones were mentioned, but hands down, the most popular seems to be Quizzes. It's Quizizz, so really creative spelling there for the web. And it's one of these things that you can do the bring your own device kind of thing, a responsive, clickable thing so students can be on a Chromebook or a tablet or a phone and answer questions and things. Apparently there's banks of questions out there you can use, or you can create your own. And again, the price tag is free. So if you've used Kahoot or some of the other tools in this spectrum, you might want to try out Quizzes because it's getting all the buzz lately. And I want to check this one out. It looks like a lot of fun.
I like the spelling.
Yeah.
Nice work, guys.
All right. And then finally, another online group that I peruse regularly is the Wells Intersection group over on Facebook, moderated by Pastor James Aderman. It's kind of an offshoot of our Wells Tech conference we held last summer. And he just regularly shows all kinds of great content there, and others do as well. A couple that I picked out that looked really interesting, 77 of the best church websites of 2016, an article from prochurchtools.com. And I'm not saying this is what you want your church websites to look like, but it certainly does give you some links and ideas of different things that some churches are doing with their church websites. So check this out for ideas. And there's 77 of them, so you may not agree with all of them, but you may find several that you like or want to mimic some of the things they're doing on their sites. And then
a real valuable tool, Sally, when you're looking at a redesign or just looking for, you know, to add a little bit of freshness to your site, is looking for examples. And sites mm-hmm. like this provide just a great opportunity to see what others are doing, even just kind of the imagery that's available, how to write a headline, all those things. You can kind of learn from just looking at other good examples of communications via the web.
Definitely. And then last but not least, from Pastor Aderman again, 4 techniques to optimize your nonprofit newsletter. This is an article on the HubSpot blog. So I think many of us do have newsletters, maybe in print, perhaps online, but there are 4 tips here. Establish the right frequency, focus on subject lines, prioritize attractive design, and then finally make it scannable. So I think more geared toward print, but some of these things may very well apply to your electronic newsletters as well. So check out the article and perhaps you'll get some ideas from that. And that, I believe, takes us through all the different community feedback we have available this week.
A wide swath we cast. good stuff. Some purely ministry focused, some education, some personal, all over the board. So keep those pieces of feedback coming in, and we will do this again next month.
Yep.
Let's move along. Next up is our news in tech section. And again, Apple is one of those news creators. They tend to kind of gobble things up and steamroll anybody else in their path when they have stuff to release. And they have released, as we mentioned, I think last week or 2 weeks ago, a new iPhone, new watch, etc. But now comes the software side. Just this week, they have updated their iOS and watchOS software. iOS software is up to iOS 10 at this point. And let me, for those of you looking on at home, I can share the screen for that. And iOS 10, and I've been using the beta just to make sure the Wells mobile app works appropriately on it. But a update that I think most people are going to like. One of the big changes to iOS 10 is the iMessage portion of the operating system. You can hand write messages at this point. You can incorporate new apps. So they've opened it up for app makers to add different things that can actually now be used within iMessage. So I think they're almost looking at things like Snapchat and recognizing that, yeah, we could take iMessage to the next level. So you're going to want to check out iMessage. The only issue I have with iMessage, of course, is that it is really only useful if the other person on the other end or other people on the other end also have iMessage. So they're kind of trying to lock you in, of course, to the Apple ecosystem, and this is another example of that. But for the most part, my family is Apple devices, so this is a welcome addition, and all kinds of things you can do now with iMessage to make it a little bit more personal with stickers and new emojis and all kinds of cool things that you can do. Maps got an update. So if you use Apple Maps, they have a new interface, and they've also integrated Maps with things like OpenTable and Uber, those kinds of things. Just some nice updates all around there. They've updated the music app, which I don't use, so I can't really comment on how improved it is, but a little bit of reading that I've done says it actually makes a little bit more sense, a little more intuitive to users. And we'll include a link in the show notes if you want to kind of see all the things that are there. But if you already have an Apple phone, chances are it's already bugged you to do the update, and I would say there's really not a reason not to. They've just done a nice job with many of the features within iOS. Sally, you updated yet?
I just did as we were waiting for this. And interestingly, I just experienced my first update change. I kicked it off maybe 10 minutes before our show started, and it finished up in about 30 minutes total. So it does take some time. You can easily set it up to do it overnight. One of the changes is that when you pick up your phone, the home screen displays, so you can see notifications and things without having to hit the on button to see it.
Raise to wait, yes. You can actually turn that off. One of the challenges they were having is because of the thumbprint or fingerprint sensor, nobody was actually spending any time on the notification screen. They were jumping right into their home screen. So this is a way to get to that notification screen by picking up the phone. So,
yeah, I'm anxious to check it all out. I don't really have any Apple friends to to enjoy all those Messenger things. I mean, I can send them across. They'll probably
no,
I have an Android. We're a mixed family here in the Draper household.
I'll be your Apple friend if you're looking.
There you go.
Also released alongside the iPhone update and the iPad, this is for iPad as well, is a new watch operating system, and probably the best upgrade or change that they made with the system is it's a little bit faster. So you can actually pin favorite apps so that when you click the button on the side, not the crown, but the button below that, it will open up favorite apps. I think you can store about 6 down there. They stay in memory, so it launches very quickly, which is one of the big knocks on the original Apple Watch. They've added some watch faces, including Minnie Mouse to go along with Mickey Mouse, if you're a big Disney fan. Today's your day. And some other watch faces. Activity sharing. So those your steps, your heart rate, those kinds of things. They've made that capable of being shared with other people with the same Apple Watch. They've made some improvements for accessibility for wheelchair use. Workout apps are better. They have a new Breathe app so that you can take some time out of a busy day and just kind of settle in a little bit and relax. Messages have been updated, just a whole host of things that you may want to check out if you are an Apple Watch user. So that's the news from Apple this week. I promise no Apple news next week. We'll find something else to talk about.
We'll hold you to it, but I don't mind. Whatever. All right, next up is our Wells Now feature, where we want to remind people that starting tomorrow night, Wednesday, September 21st, we're going to have a brand new online interactive faith Bible study.
And we talked a little bit about that last week, but that starts basically, if you're listening to this the same day the show is released, it's tonight. So make sure you head on over to the website and grab the study materials. It is going live at 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. It'll be now through October 26th. The Bible study leader is Reverend John Brown. He is currently employed at Northwestern Publishing House as the FIC editor. The theme of this top, the theme of this Bible study is, what does this mean, the continuing importance of Luther's small catechism? Head on over to wells.net, click on, I think it's right on the homepage there, click on Interactive Faith. We'll put a link in the show notes. And join in. This is a really good series. They run it about 3 times a year with the guest presenters each time. So this promises to be a very good one. So you may want to put that on your calendar.
Cool.
All right. Shall we move on to picks of the week, Sally?
I think we should.
Took some time and picked something for everybody.
Chomping at the bit here. Yes, my pick comes from Better Cloud Monitor, and I wasn't real familiar with Better Cloud Monitor until a few months ago when they bought the Google Guru site. So we've talked many times about Google Guru and all the great tips that they put out related to Google Drive and all the different resources available in the Google Cloud. This one is related. It is a Google Slides tip, something I wasn't aware of, but how you can on Google Slides obtain a laser pointer to use in your Google Slides presentations. So if you're watching my screen, I actually have a presentation up in a tab here, and what they point you to is a bar that's along the bottom of your Google Slides. You may not be able to see that, but I'll have a link in the show notes, and when you click on the laser pointer in that bar, your mouse changes to a red dot with a tail. So it looks kind of like Haley's comment, and it allows you to more easily point to things than the little white mouse that's kind of hard to find when people are watching your presentation. So just a better mouse for presenting, and it's easy to turn on and off with that presentation toolbar that appears down in the lower left corner. Actually, I think if I switch back to the article, they have a screenshot of it. It looks like kind of like a letter Z, and when you click on it, then your mouse changes to that red mouse with a tail, so you can easily see it as a presenter. The article covers a couple of other tips. One of the best ones is to point you to a site called Slides Carnival. We've talked about that on the show before, but if you're using Google Slides, this is a great place to find some really professional templates for your Google Slide, and they walk you through how to use the templates on your slideshow. They give you some instructions for that. And then finally in the article, they talk about editing the slide master. So that's basically what controls your slide fonts and design and things. So if you're maybe wanting to put a logo in the bottom right corner of all your slides, it's a lot easier to go do it once on the slide master than to edit each individual slide and add that logo. So again, reference the article. It's got all three of those great things, really simple and straightforward, easy to follow, and they'll teach you how to change your pointer, to use Slides Carnival, and to change your slides master. So that's my pick of the week.
Very nice. I'm assuming that pointer only works within the presentation itself, which is actually useful. There are others I know that you can get for your operating system where you can change your pointer as well. You know,
okay.
I think even Windows has one called Mouse Trails that will kind of do something similar for the mouse in general. So cool.
Okay.
I like that. That's built right in, and that's a great advantage. Gone are the days of laser pointers and those kinds of things. You can do it right there with your mouse.
Yeah,
and with definitely touch screens, that's even better. So.
Yeah, with your audience in mind, so they have a better experience.
Yeah, for sure. All right, my pick. Anybody who is even a casual listener to the show knows that I'm a big OneNote fan. And this has been a pick of mine before. I'm not picking OneNote, but a utility, a plugin that is available for, I think, almost every browser, and that's the OneNote Web Clipper. And that's just a little utility that sits there by itself up in the, minding its own business, up in the tray on your browser. But when you come to a page that you want to clip or remember, It does a number of things for you. So those of you that are watching at home, I just happen to be on our Amazon page with our new book, With All Your Heart, Project Management for Churches, Christian Schools, and Faith-Based Organizations. And let's say this is something that I was maybe considering buying, and I wanted to kind of store that information. Of course, you could click and add that to your favorites. I found that to capture more of the page is somewhat helpful for me when I'm going back and trying to review things. And that's where the web clipper comes in. And this can capture almost any kind of information. It's gotten a total facelift, which is really nice. You have four different options when you click on the clipper itself up in the tray. You can clip the full page, so you're going to get the full page view from top to bottom. And that means from, if it scrolls a long way, it'll give you all of the information from top to bottom. You can decide what location you in your OneNote you want to store it, and you can have different notebooks and different folders within those notebooks available to you, and you just hit the clip button. In addition to being able to change the title, you can also add your own note. And it comes with obviously an image of the whole page, but also a link, a shortcut back to the page itself. You can do a region. So you, once you click that, you would just click and drag over the portion that you want to select, so you don't have to pick the whole thing. You can do just the article if it is like a blog post. I think I've got one over here, a blog post from Church Mag. So if I hit article, it will strip out all the advertising, all the navigation, and just give exactly the content that you want. One nice new addition that they made is to change the font type. So you can go between sans serif and serif, depending on your preference. You can increase or decrease the font size, so you can get more on a page. And then you can also highlight. So if you click the highlight button, you can highlight different areas as you're reading through it so that you can remember very quickly once you come back to that OneNote clipped image or clipped article, what is it you exactly were interested in and wanted to remember. And then you can just do a regular old bookmark, which would give you a thumbnail. It would pick an image from the website itself, give you a nice title, give you a link to it, and then the first few sentences from the article itself. And again, you can add a note. I think probably one of the biggest reasons why I like using the OneNote web clipper and OneNote in general is the ability to clip this stuff and collect it into ways that I can organize it. So I can put them into sections, I can put them into different tabs, subpages, I can annotate, but then I can also search. So OneNote has a great search mechanism where I can type in a search term, and it'll not only search the text on the page, but it'll search anything that's been clipped from the web, and it'll search any images that it has retrieved from the web. So if you've got infographics or those kinds of things, the ability for OneNote to find that stuff is really awesome. Clearly, you can save stuff locally that may disappear from the web. It's easy to share. And as I mentioned, annotation is really kind of built right in as well. So I'm a big fan of what the web clipper does for me in getting stuff into my a place where I just kind of store everything at this point. And that's OneNote, just an awesome tool available on mobile devices as well as my computer. And works in that web clipper works in almost any browser. So, I don't know if you do you use something like that, Sally?
I guess probably the closest I'd come to it is Digo, which does allow you to annotate and things. And I was just kind of reflecting as you were talking that this is really it's kind of an underlying habit or rules that you set up for yourself. And they begin to pay off dividends when you're able to do things like search or retrieve content that is no longer out there, but you know it was great content and you want to get at it or whatever. So I can see the power of it. I can also see that it does take some discipline to get into those kind of habits and reap the benefits. I was thinking, yeah, if I did research all the time and I was writing my dissertation or whatever, but it doesn't have to be that way. The web is just throwing so many great things at you. Being able to capture it and organize it, I think, can be super powerful for anyone.
So. And you've got it there in your OneNote along with all your other stuff, which could include documents, other notes, audio, video recordings, all that stuff. It just becomes the place for, I think that's the challenge. We have so many tools available, so many things built into the browser, you know, places to store stuff, and you can't keep it all straight. Sometimes, you know, it's in OneDrive or it's in Dropbox or it's, you know, here or there. OneNote, which sits on top of OneDrive, just makes it kind of that single source. And if it's not there, then it doesn't exist in your little ecosystem. You don't have to remember, well, I put that here, or et cetera. So, and it's cross-platform and works really well. So one of the best-kept secrets, I think, of Microsoft Product Suite. So,
all right.
That is my pick of the week. Let's move on to kind of our ministry pick of the week, we could call it, our ministry resources section.
Yep, and I actually have up something I wasn't familiar at all with. It's called Zoom.us, Zoom Us. And Zoom is a video conferencing solution. So you can use it in meeting settings and things like that. It's not a free solution. It's one that comes at a price. I believe their pro account is $150 a year. But we've heard some really positive feedback, in particular from Pastor James Berenger, who happens to be the director of special ministries. Yeah. And so Pastor Berenger has a unique situation because one of the groups in special ministries he works with are hearing impaired. And it's very important if they have an interpreter as part of their video conferencing that everyone's able to have a solid connection to see that interpreter and the nuances of the sign language that they're interpreting for those that are hearing impaired. And they found Zoom to be a really stable and clear video conferencing platform, and for their unique situation it was definitely worth a small price to pay, actually $150 a year, to have that kind of stability that they were looking for. So he wanted us to share that with Wells Tech listeners because there may be others who are in similar situations. Maybe you know, a particular solution just doesn't work well in your particular networking scenario or whatever, and this might be one worth investigating. Zoom.us.
Yeah, video conferencing has come so far just in the time we've been doing this podcast. It was painful in the beginning, and you had to have the bandwidth necessary, and you had to have, you know, enough CPU power, you know, computing power. Cameras, everything has become so consumer level. I mean, you can get a solution that works really well for not much money or for no dollars. This podcast is an example of that, right? We video chat every week. At least we have for the past
8.5 years.
4 years, 5 years, I don't remember.
True. It hadn't been the whole time. It was audio to start with, but.
That's right.
A long time.
We now have pictures.
Mm-hmm.
What's our featured video this week?
Well, this is one that I had the pleasure of watching live streaming. Last week, MLC had a very special guest. It was Matab Mehmoodi, and Matab is actually the Not Without My Child daughter who was detained in Iran by her father after a family trip there, and eventually she and her mother were able to escape and came back to Michigan. And she spoke at MLC on the power of Christian education, a very inspiring presentation. As a first grader, she was enrolled at, I believe it was Salem in Owosso, Michigan. So one of our Wells congregations, lay low, never expect to find her there, I guess. And that's where she was. And she heard about the love of Christ in the very short time that she was in the school systems in Iran. She said she was taught to hate. It was indoctrinated in her. And so this was such a fresh start for her, and she grasped onto the gospel message, and it changed her life. And she's just a very inspirational speaker and also very encouraging for Christian education, for those teachers we're training there at MLC, for parents to consider for their own children. You definitely want to listen to Matab. I think the presentation is about an hour and a half. She does some questions and answers at the end. She did it in the morning for the MLC students and then in the evening for the community at large. And so there's two versions of her presentation there, but well worth your time and inspirational. Her mom, Betty, was there with her. She's actually the author of Not Without My Child. Matab has a new book called My Name is Matab, I believe is the name of the book. And so both of them were there and did book signings and things like that. But just a really exciting message to hear and so encouraging for Christian education.
Neat. Very neat. It's neat that MLC can put that kind of stuff on, first of all, but then also that they can make that available online for everybody to see and for us to enjoy. So.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
All right, Sally, that's going to about do it this week. We will come back and do it all over again next week. What's on deck?
Well, I'm very excited next week to introduce to our listeners
in one of those areas.
Yeah. She should be familiar to our Wells Tech listeners because she was part of our Wells Tech conference. She's led presentations and such on using ChristLight with the smart board, on using Google Drive to complete WELSA requirements, just a wide variety of experience she brings. She's actually working on her PhD. She's a super smart gal, and we're just really blessed to have her joining us on Wells Tech. So tune in next week for Rachel's Wells Tech debut.
Just so I've got all the facts and figures right, so we get off on the right foot with Rachel. Bethany, she's at Bethany in Kenosha.
Kenosha. Good job, Martin. You're fast on the search.
Yearbook.wells.net. All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Appreciate you tuning in each and every week. Share it with your friends, family members, coworkers. We would love to enlarge the Wells Tech family and have even a bigger and more meaningful conversation each and every week. So thanks for tuning in this week, and we hope to see you next week. Bye-bye.